Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Explorer by Elin Peer, narrated by Mia Madison and John Masterson. Prologue, One of the Boys, Northlands, year 2448, Aubrey. Mason and Indiana sped up when I caught up to them. They were heading into the back part of our property line, behind the arena, where the massive trees were. "Go home, Aubrey," my twin brother Mason told me. "I want to come with you. Are you going to climb the big one?" "Yes, but you can't come." "Why?" "It's not for girls. It's too dangerous." "I'm older than you are." Mason turned his head and scoffed. "By 6 minutes." Running a little faster, I got in front of the boys and walked backwards. Speaking while looking at them, I said, "So what? You still don't get to order me around. I'm just as good at climbing trees as you are." Mason didn't slow down as he spoke. "Of course I get to order you around. I'm your protector. Dad told me so." I gave up walking backward and turned my nose in the same direction as them. "Mom said women are just as badass as men." "You're 10, which means you're a girl, Aubrey, not a woman, and you can't come." Shifting tactics, I turned my attention to Indiana, who was older than Mason and me by 3 months. "Tell Mason he's being a jerk. I'm not a normal girl, and you know it." Indiana had a stick in his hands that he swung through the tall grass while walking at a fast pace like Mason. "It's for your own good, Aubrey. We don't want you to get hurt. Mason and I shouldn't even be climbing up the big one."
"Then why are you?"
Indiana wrinkled his forehead as if the question were stupid.
"Because it's fun."
"Exactly." I had to jog to keep up with them. A year ago, I'd been taller than both Indiana and Mason, but not any longer. When we reached the big one, we stood for a moment with our necks craned back and our eyes trying to see the top of the giant pine tree.
"We should have brought safety equipment," Indiana mumbled, but my brother just snorted. "Safety equipment is for pussies."
"Dad told us not to climb this one. It's slippery and too tall." Looking down his nose at me, Mason spoke in a demanding tone.
"Which is why you'll stay down here and never tell anyone that Indiana and I climbed that tree."
"If you can do it, I can too." Mason pointed the way we'd come.
"Go home, Aubrey. It's better that way."
Crossing my arms, I raised my chin and gave my brother the stink eye. With an annoyed huff, he turned away from me and approached the tree. Mason had to jump to get a hold of the lowest branch. Pulling himself up, he did a balancing act and stood on top of the branch, looking upward for his next branch to climb. Indiana followed his example, and with agile movements, the two strong boys climbed up the forbidden tree. My body was buzzing with a combination of fear and excitement. If I accepted their bossing me around and telling me something was too dangerous, I'd end up like my boring cousin Freya. She was our age, but happy with being a spectator when the boys did all the fun things. Realizing that the lowest branch was too high for me to reach by jumping, I narrowed my eyes and backed up enough to give me room for speed. Accelerating as fast as I could, I ran up the trunk of the tree and jumped to grab onto the lowest branch. Hours of practicing on the agility course paid off as I managed to swing my body to the top of the thick branch. Balancing on top, I put a supporting hand on the tree trunk and looked up to see my brother already halfway up the enormous fir. Mason looked down at me and warned,
"Don't do it, Aubrey. You could get hurt."
"Shut up, Mason. You're not my dad."
"No, but if I was, I'd spank you for not following instructions."
Ignoring his scolding, I climbed upward, wishing I had Indiana's strength. His arms were already toned and showing bumps of muscle.
"It's not fair that boys are stronger than girls," I grumped while continuing to climb.
"But I'm still going to show you that I can do anything you can."
Don't be stupid, Aubrey. I don't want you to get hurt.
It's not up to you.
Indiana looked up to Mason above us, who was far ahead. I could tell how conflicted he was.
You don't have to wait for me. Just go.
You sure? Indiana asked.
I don't need your help. I can climb a stupid tree myself. I've done it a million times.
Not the big one. None of us have. Just then, I nearly slipped. Tightening my grip on the branch above me, I felt adrenaline rushing through me, and my heartbeat spiked from fear.
I said go, Indy. I don't need you staring at me.
He hesitated for a second, and then he climbed upward, leaving me to regret that I had ever run after my brother in Indiana to begin with. If only I wasn't so bloody curious. Now I was forced to prove that I could be one of the boys. I had to find a way to overcome my fear and climb this stupid, monstrous tree. Every branch higher was a victory. When I was midway, Mason was coming down again.
I told you not to climb up. Why don't you ever listen? He said. If you can do it, so can I.
Aubrey, stop! You're going to kill yourself! Mason shouted after me as I kept climbing. Seriously, don't go any higher. It's windy and slippery up there. I believed him, but with my heart in my throat and my palms wet from fear, I still kept going. Mason had made it all the way up, which proved to me that it was possible. Later, when it was Indiana's turn to pass me on his way down, he pleaded with me once again.
You don't have to do this, Aubrey. No girl has ever made it this high up. Look, you can see above the forest from here, and the mansion looks tiny, doesn't it?
We stood for a moment on each side of the giant trunk of the tree, looking out over the million pine trees that surrounded the gray manor where I lived.
Did you see your island from the top? I asked Indiana, who lived on Victoria's Island with his family.
I did. It's beautiful, but let's go down together. I'll help you. My stubborn nature wouldn't allow me to give up before I reached the top.
I'll see you down there. I'm going up.
Be careful, Aubrey, Indiana warned. It felt like I climbed forever. And when I finally reached the top, my arms and legs felt like jelly. There were more branches above me, but the part that I was holding onto was already swaying, so I decided not to go any further. The view from here was endless. I had to be at least 200 feet above the ground, and looking down scared me. To my left, I could see water and Victoria's Island, where the Boulder family and the School of Inclusion was located. Going up had felt dangerous, but coming back down felt even scarier. Half the time, I couldn't see where I was placing my foot. Why had I wanted to climb this stupid tree anyway? Suddenly, my parents' warning to never climb tall trees without safety equipment sounded like good advice. Twice, I almost slipped, and my chest was starting to feel too small for my poor heart, which was racing to keep up with the fear and exhaustion that I felt. Take it slow and move your foot a little to the right. Indiana had waited for me where he last saw me. I felt like crying with relief that he was here to help me, but I wouldn't show him. Indiana wasn't that much older, but he was bright, athletic, and more patient than Mason and me. Together, we climbed down with him guiding me to place my hands and feet right. Are you okay? You look tired.
I'm fine, I said harshly, but I was beyond tired. My limbs were shaking with exhaustion.
You're almost there. Just keep going, Indiana encouraged me.
I know.
Looking down, I could see Mason standing on the ground looking up at us. I had 20 feet between the ground and me when I lost concentration, and my eagerness made me speed up.
Careful!
Indiana's scream of warning sounded as I slipped and fell back over. The lowest branch took the worst of my fall, but one of the branches tore open the skin on my jawline.
Fuck! Mason shouted and ran to me.
Don't cry. Never cry. I told myself as I lay flat on the ground with all the air knocked out of my body.
I told you it was dangerous, Mason scolded me. Now Dad is gonna blame me and Indy.
Indiana had made it down to the ground and came running.
Your face, Aubrey. Are you all right?
Trying to sit up, I lifted my hands to my face and felt moisture. I looked at my shaking hands. My fingers were smeared in blood.
Oh, no.
Don't look at it, Aubrey. It's bad. Mason's warning was the last thing I heard before I passed out. Chapter 1. Staying Behind. Old Europe, December 26th, 2465. Aubrey. The sight of my uncle's drone flying off with my cousins Freya and Thor, my brother Mason, my friend Belle, and my brother-in-law Jonah left me with a mix of emotions. There was a feeling of, oh, fuck, why did I offer to stay behind? But even more so, there was a feeling of pride. Because of my bravery, my twin brother Mason could now marry my good friend Belle, who was pregnant with their child.
I can't believe you look relieved, Indiana muttered next to me.
With the drone now a mere spot on the horizon, I turned to my lifelong friend and saw him standing with his hands on his hips.
Of all the trouble you've gotten me into over the years, this one takes the cake.
I didn't ask you to stay, I defended myself.
It's not like I had a bloody choice. Thor is the heir, Jonah is married and has children, and Mason had to focus on saving his woman and child. I was the only protector able to stay.
I've told you a million times that I don't need a protector. I'm not like other women.
No, that's bloody obvious. A normal woman wouldn't have a strong death wish.
I scoffed and mirrored his stance. I don't have a death wish.
Then why do you insist on putting yourself in danger all the time? Don't think I'm fooled by your so-called self-sacrifice. The moment you met Banny and the other explorers, your lust for adventure was ignited. I saw it in your eyes, Aubrey.
He was right, of course, but I hated to admit that. So instead, I rolled my eyes and walked back the way we'd come. Once we got back to the office of the French Prime Minister, all signs of Thor's angry outburst had been erased. The chairs had been picked up from the floor and put back in place, and there were no papers spread out over the floor. Victor was still there, and the tension in the room told me that he had been arguing with the Prime Minister, Raphael Moreau.
I trust you sent them off well.
The smirk on Raphael's face made me want to throttle him. Yes, I gave him a bored glance. Let's hope for your sake that they can talk my father and Khan into not starting a war to get me back. If I were you, I'd sleep with my clothes on for the next few weeks. If my father decides to come, he'll start by killing you himself. Raphael's hands went to his bald head, and his thin gray eyebrows furrowed.
Jonah wouldn't allow a war. He speaks with the weight of the Council of the Motherlands. Surely your father and uncle would respect that.
Indiana snorted.
If you think Magni Aurelius will just let you take his daughter, then you don't know him. He'll burn down all of Europe if he has to,
and kill innocent people.
Victor stood up from the chair he'd been sitting on. I crossed my arms. My father is a warrior and a protector, Victor. He'll do whatever it takes to get me back.
Unless Mason, Thor, Freya, and Jonah can convince him that I'll protect Aubrey, that is,
Indiana added.
Let's hope for your sake that they succeed.
Victor's eyes looked sunken in his skull, as if acute sleep deprivation and worry was sucking him dry of energy.
It's your fault, you know, I pointed my finger at him. I still want to kick your ass for speaking to Freya like you did. She was trying to be brave and offer herself so that Mason and Belle could be happy together. You humiliated and degraded her in front of everyone.
Victor's hands folded along his sides.
I don't know what Freya's game was about, but I know that she didn't mean it. There's no way in hell she would truly want to live with me.
We had all been under pressure when Raphael Moreau had demanded Freya stay behind in exchange for him letting Belle go. We had all watched in horror as Freya offered to sacrifice herself. Her demands had been that she didn't want to give up her children, like they did here in old Europe, and that she wanted to have them with Victor. Knowing my cousin Freya, she had picked Victor because of his status as a genius. It had to be that, because his personality was obnoxious. Scowling at Victor, I spoke in an accusatory tone. I'm not claiming to understand Freya's logic, but you tried to fucking crush her. That thing you said about preferring to drink radioactive water rather than sleeping with her was more than I could listen to. You're such a bag of shit, Victor. Indiana grunted in agreement. Raphael stood up from his chair behind his large desk.
If we can move on from these childish squabbles, we should look at the practicalities. I've already instructed Victor to take you to your apartment. You'll be delighted to hear that it's above ground and close to the park.
I didn't think you had any available apartments. Isn't that what you tell the people living below ground? Raphael met my gaze.
I made a call, and you're simply jumping to the head of the line. Someone else was supposed to move into this apartment tomorrow, but they'll have to wait until something else becomes available. If you don't like the idea of line jumping, you could always move into Belle's room. With her leaving, that's now available.
We'll take the apartment, Indiana said before I could speak. I nodded in agreement. Victor spoke in French to Raphael, who shrugged.
What did you ask him?
Victor answered Indiana in a level tone.
I asked if I should have Belle's personal belongings stored for her.
I took a step forward. Yes, we'll bring it all back home when we visit this summer.
Very well.
Victor gave a curt nod and turned his attention back to Raphael.
If we're done here, I'd like to get going. Oui, show our new residents to their appartement.
When Victor, Indiana, and I left Raphael's office, Victor was quiet. Leading us through the streets, he ignored the people shouting greetings and questions at us. Why are you being so rude? I asked him.
I'm just tired.
But that woman back there was smiling at you, and you didn't spare her a glance. Victor kept walking.
Half of them are curious about you too and want to know who you are. The other half want to connect with me because I'm famous. I'm not in the mood, Aubrey.
No, I know your default mode is being an asshole. Victor walked on. And once we got to the right building, we took an elevator to the 23rd floor and walked down a long corridor to room number 417.
This is your place. I'll make sure some groceries and hygiene products are delivered to you.
Indiana and I walked inside the small apartment. He stopped in the hallway and looked into a tiny restroom.
My legs won't fit in the front of that toilet. Then you'll have to sit sideways. We don't build things for giants here.
Victor said, matter-of-factly. From the cramped entry area, we walked into an open living room and kitchen.
Damn, it's small, Indiana breathed.
Walking to the kitchen, I opened the cabinets.
Where's the home bot? We don't use them here. Preparing food and cleaning your home is considered good to relieve stress, so we teach all children to cook and clean.
I looked to Indiana. I've never cooked or cleaned in my life. Have you?
My mom cooks, and she's taught us the basics.
Victor stood leaning against the doorway.
With all the times you Northlanders have bragged that you can survive in the wilderness, I'm sure you can survive in an appartement without the home bot, too.
Indiana nodded and then frowned.
Wait a minute. Why is there only one door?
Walking across the small living room, he looked into a room before turning to Victor.
Where's the other bedroom?
There isn't one. You'll be roommates and you'll share a bedroom.
You know I can't do that, Indiana argued. Magni would kill me if he knew I slept in the same bed as his daughter.
Victor shrugged.
Then don't tell him. You're a long way from home now, and we have no two-bedroom apartment available. If we did, I wouldn't have to share my bed with a resident from a mold-infested building complex. That reminds me,
Bani has been informed that you two are his new team members. He was excited.
I lit up in a smile.
That's great. Bani or one of his men will meet you here tomorrow morning at 9.
Indiana had moved to the short couch.
This is going to be uncomfortable to sleep on.
Victor gave a sigh of irritation.
I don't have time for your weird angst about sleeping next to Aubrey. I've never understood that part of your culture. I'll make sure you receive some groceries and set you up with wristbands that are connected to our network. Take the evening to relax and get some sleep. What if we need to get a hold of you?
I'll make sure the wristbands have my contact info in them, but I'd prefer if you used it as little as possible. Before you ask, the answer is no, you can't communicate with your family back home. All outgoing calls for the public are blocked on purpose.
Why? It's political. All you need to know is that if you want to send a message to your friends back home, I can help you. I'll see if I can convince Raphael to let you have the same privilege as we delegation members. We've been allowed to correspond with the outside world.
This is ridiculous, Victor, I complained. Can't you use your genius to find a way to fix the situation? We need to be able to call our family and friends back home. Victor looked like he had aged 10 years in the last few hours. Raking his hand through his thick, dark hair, he groaned.
If I hear one more time that I should use my genius, I'm going to kill myself. I'm not a fucking magician. And I told you, it's not a matter of technology, it's politics.
Indiana and I exchanged a look. Something was completely off about Victor.
Hey, are you okay, man?
Indiana asked, but Victor just turned on his heels and left.
Should we worry?
Indiana asked me. About Victor? I snorted. Why would we? Indiana was silent for a long moment.
I don't know. He looked like he meant the part about killing himself.
He was tired, Indy. He said so himself.
Yeah, but it was more than that. He looks like he'd just learned that he was terminal.
Ugh, don't worry about him. Victor is a grown man. He'll figure it out, I said, and walked into the small bedroom. The bed was so narrow that I started to laugh.
What's so funny?
Turning, I saw Indiana filling out the doorway with his large frame. They call this a double bed. That's what's funny.
I'll sleep on the floor. Don't worry.
Stop it, Indy. You heard Victor. No one is going to tell my dad, and I trust you. Getting down, I stretched my legs out on the bed. I want to see if we can even fit on this kid's bed.
You sure?
Indiana stood with both hands on the top of the doorframe. You're acting like you're afraid of me. Get down here. I patted the mattress next to me. The bed creaked when Indiana lowered his body to lie next to me. I'm not toxic, you know.
I didn't say you were.
Then why are you on edge like you're afraid of touching me?
I'm not. It's just weird to be alone with you and in a bed.
Well, get over it, because we'll be staying in old Europe for a year. Indiana moved a little closer, and it made his upper arm touch my shoulder. For a moment, we lay in silence, staring up at the ceiling.
Promise me that you won't tell your dad about this,
Indiana muttered low. I promise. Turning our heads at the same time, we locked eyes.
Let's make a pact. I held up my hand. What happens in old Europe stays in old Europe. We won't tell on each other.
Indiana lowered his brow.
Deal.
Chapter 2 Lesson. Indiana. My first night sleeping next to Aubrey was difficult. I was concerned that I might turn in my sleep and touch her without knowing. At least 10 times, unknown noises in the apartment woke me up with my instinct to protect her activated. Each time I woke up, my young grasshopper was sleeping like a blissful angel next to me. When she finally woke up at 7, she stretched and yawned.
Good morning, big guy.
Morning. Did you sleep well? Aubrey turned on her side and smiled.
I did. Except for when you woke me up.
My eyebrows flew up. I woke you up?
Yeah. You were talking in your sleep.
As I feared the worst, my heart picked up speed. What did I say?
I think you had an erotic dream because you were moaning.
You're lying. My cheeks felt flaming hot all of a sudden. Aubrey laughed and pushed her long red hair back.
Here's what you sounded like.
Closing her eyes, she was half laughing and half moaning.
Oh, yes. Tickle me there. Yes. I've been a bad boy. I deserve a spanking.
Sitting up, I threw my pillow on top of her face to make her stop. Removing it, she laughed even louder.
Okay, you didn't ask for a spanking, but you were moaning. Who were you dreaming of, Indy? Come on, you can tell me. Was it Sparrow? I know you have a thing for Sparrow.
I don't. She's like a sister to me.
I bet Archer and Kaya would love to have you as their son-in-law. You think she's beautiful, admit it.
Getting out of bed, I shook my head. Everyone can see Sparrow is beautiful, but that doesn't mean I have sexual fantasies about her.
What about me? Do you have sexual fantasies about me?
Aubrey was still laughing. Sure, all the fucking time. Rolling my eyes, I picked up my shirt from the floor.
I knew it!
Aubrey threw my pillow at me and got out of bed, too. We hadn't come to old Europe with any clothes, since we never intended to stay for more than a day. At least Victor had arranged for tooth cleaners to be sent over last night. Aubrey had slept in her t-shirt, panties, and socks. Now that she was up, she moved around without pants like it was the most natural thing. It should be, because we had known each other our entire lives, and I'd seen her in a bikini many times. But the fact that we were unsupervised made this situation very different.
You're not wearing a bra.
The filter in my brain wasn't awake yet, and my thoughts spilled out. Aubrey turned.
So, does it bother you?
No, but...
Her right eyebrow rose as she waited for me to elaborate. Just don't walk around like that when we're with Banny and the other crew members.
Why? You think I can't protect myself?
I popped in a tooth cleaner and threw the packet to her. I know you're strong, Aubrey. You're the best female fighter I've ever met, but you can't deny that we men have an advantage in size and strength.
I'm tall.
You're 6 feet and taller than most men, but still, Banny looks like he could take you down if he wanted to. Aubrey had just opened her mouth and put a tooth cleaner in when my words made her scrunch up her face.
He couldn't.
All I'm saying is that you should watch how you dress around men you don't know. You have to consider what signals you're sending. In 10 fast steps, Aubrey came to stand right in front of me. With fire in her eyes, she stabbed her finger through the air.
I refuse to live my life in fear of what signals I might send. If you men could have it your way, you'd have us women cover ourselves so as not to attract attention. That's not fucking happening. I'm not hiding my hair, my body, or my brain by playing small so that men don't feel threatened by my words or tempted by my body. This is 2465, in case you haven't noticed.
I'm just trying to protect you, I argued.
Don't. After 27 years of men protecting me, I can tell you that protection feels a lot like control.
You think I'm controlling you?
My tone was incredulous. With a snort, I squeezed the shirt I was still holding in my hand.
I'm sorry, Grasshopper, but the man who can control you hasn't been born yet. Keeping you safe from yourself is a full-time job in itself. Sometimes I feel sorry for the man you marry.
Her chin rose in a challenging stare.
How so?
Because the poor bastard will see your femininity and beauty and think you're everything he ever imagined in a woman. Imagine his surprise when he realizes that you're one of the boys.
That's right.
Aubrey pressed the tip of her index finger into my chest.
And if he doesn't respect a no, I'll show him that my body is mine.
I looked down at her because, despite Aubrey's height of 6 feet,
there were still 8 inches between us.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?